This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Come on. Welcome to Money Savage, a savage approach to personal finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, strong and powerful Buck Joffrey. Buck, are you ready to do this?
I'm ready.
Excellent. Let's do this. Buck started out as a surgeon with experience in brain surgery as well as cosmetic surgery. He's an entrepreneur, an author, a podcast host, cryptocurrency and blockchain advisor, as well as a real estate investor. I'm excited to have you on. Buck, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Well, yeah, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a serial entrepreneur and investor who happens to be a doctor. But I don't practice anymore. I actually finished my training back in 2009, and really just kind of came out and was influenced a lot by Robert Kiyosaki off the bat, and really got into entrepreneurship, made some money, started investing in real estate, started looking at, you know, different ways to deploy capital. So the next thing you know, I'm a guy who started a few different businesses and then started to figure out what, you know, how to manage that money. Because I've always been more kind of guy who's wants to do it myself and learn how to invest it rather than just handing it over to somebody and, you know, hoping for the best.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. How hard was it to walk away from medicine after, like, have to imagine an immense amount of time and work to complete all that training?
Well, yeah. So I was 34 when I finished residency fellowship training, and I, you know, practiced in earnest for about 6 years and then phased out over the course of a couple years. So to answer your question, not hard at all, because, you know, there's a couple things that I think that in surgery, I'm a surgeon, I enjoyed operating, but I think, I think at any point, you know, you kind of do something for a while and you have to decide whether you want to do that for the rest of your life or you're ready for the next chapter. In my case, it just so happened that, you know, I spent from the age of, you know, from college and med school and residency training, you know, a couple decades in that time. I didn't really ever think about it as something I was walking away from, but rather that, you know, now is as good a time as any to start doing other things that I want to do. So, you know, I think that's an important point too, because I know a lot of miserable doctors, and,
right.
I don't think I was miserable. I just was, you know, I'm a guy who just likes to do different things and, you know, start businesses and, you know, think of ways to invest in things and that kind of thing. And that was really what I was excited about. So, and when I walked away, understand that I still own, the initial business that I started. It was a cosmetic surgery business. It's just that I'm not the surgeon anymore. And, it just a matter of, well, I've done that. I liked operating, but I thought I'd miss it more, but I don't.
Okay. Fair enough. I appreciate that. So obviously somebody incredibly capable of hard work, learning, and then actually taking what you've learned and applying, which is obviously being a surgeon, and now teaching. How has that been?
Yeah, I've always sort of been a teacher at heart, and part of that is because I always feel like in order for me to truly understand something well, if I can't explain it myself, I probably just don't understand it very well.
Right. You know? Yeah.
So that applies literally to everything. I mean, I think, you know, I can, the way I thought about surgical procedures when I was learning them, I always felt like when I actually figured out how to do something, I would wonder, well, why didn't somebody just tell me to do it this way? And I would have understood it the first time. And so sometimes it's you know, people are really good at things and they don't know how to explain things. And sometimes people just, you know, really don't understand things, and that's why they can't explain things.
Sure.
And so, for me, there's great pleasure I derive from simplifying what appears to be the complex, and saying, hey, it's really not that hard to understand, and it's really just this, and that. I mean, I have, as you mentioned, I've done everything from neurosurgery to cosmetic surgery and now real estate investing and all that. And I have not found anything where, to a certain degree, you can't break it down to a few steps and explain to somebody some of the general concepts, right?
Yeah, I appreciate that. And as you were talking, it reminded me, I had the chance to read a lot of your book, The Seven Secrets of Eternal Wealth. And it opens with talking about what you call outdated paradigms. And I think that sort of plays into what we were talking about a minute ago with sometimes people just take things at face value. It's like, why are we doing things this way? Well, that's the way they've always been done.
Right. Exactly. And I think, and there's a good reason for that though. I mean, because if you think about the way we learn in school, it is, I was talking about this with somebody the other day, is you get through this pattern, right? You know, you're in first grade, then you go to second grade, then you get third grade. And then suddenly you're out of high school. And for a lot of us, it was a no-brainer that you're going to go to college. And there's a curriculum there, and somebody's going to teach you something there. And all of a sudden you're done with college, and maybe you go to grad school. And then you're, you know, somebody tells you what you're supposed to learn there. And then finally you're done, and nobody's telling you what to do anymore. Well, I mean, if you have a boss, sure, but my point is that at one point we're so trained to just do what we're told to do and to stick with the status quo that the easiest thing to do when there's no formal curriculum around is to default to conventional wisdom, right? And conventional wisdom is what everybody else is doing, so it must be the right thing. And the problem with conventional financial wisdom is that conventional financial wisdom is also often, you know, it's created primarily by special interests, namely the banks, Wall Street. And I think it reminds me of, you know, I always talk about this big article that came out in New England Journal of Medicine and exposing this thing back in the 50s with the sugar industry was funding Harvard Medical School research about how, you know, how to basically keep out of the public's mind that sugar itself may have some significant negative impacts on cardiovascular health. And it reminds me a lot of that because basically it's special interest funding information that ultimately leads to this food pyramid that we all had up in our classrooms as children. And it was conventional wisdom, but it was ultimately because of special interests. And now we know that food pyramid really wasn't, it was pretty much kind of upside down. So,
right. Yeah. I think we certainly live in an era, and we've probably been there for a long time to your point, where critical thinking is probably never been more important because the era of fake news and you need to consider this, whatever it might be. So
sure.
I really try to take information and think, okay, what's really going on here? Let me try to break this down to the fundamental level and get rid of complexity and try to make sense of it that way. So as you are counseling people on getting started with investing, if it's in real estate or if it's with crypto, is there a certain process that you help take people through or that you help them kind of begin with the end in mind, or how, just break that down for me, please?
Yeah. I mean, it sort of depends where you are in life, right? I mean, if you don't have a lot of money, I think, you know, I'm a big real estate guy, right? So, that's where I think you can create the most wealth, but you know, Robert Kiyosaki is one of my big, you know, I would call him a mentor. And And when I read his books, you know, everybody has this idea in their head that, hey, you can just buy real estate and you're getting wealthy, right? And the reality is that there's more to it. If you're a younger person, what you really need to be focusing on is how to make more money, you know, because no matter what right. you invest in, if you don't have money, you have nothing to invest in, right? So I use an equation, right? So I have an equation that I, you know, it's sort of a altered Newtonian physics equation, but the wealth is equal to the product of what I call mass times velocity times leverage, right? So wealth is well, of course, that's self-explanatory, but mass is how much money you actually invest, right? So that's obvious, right? If you don't invest anything, it doesn't matter how much leverage or velocity you have. You multiply anything right. by zero, it's zero. And so that's that. And then you have velocity, which is effectively what's your return on investment or return on equity, how quickly you get your own money back, so to speak. And then finally, leverage is using, you know, other people's money, namely the bank. Right. So that is sort of a hallmark of how you create wealth. It's the playbook. Right. And you, without significant mass or without leverage, without velocity, no one really gets wealthy unless you're, you know, you just happen to be a, you know, rock star or professional baseball player, or, you know, or football player or whatever. But without that, you're not going to get very far. Right. So I think understanding the math is actually very, very important, first and foremost, because if you can get to that point, then you can say, okay, well, it looks like the first thing I need to do is I really just need to start making more money. And that's where all the investment gurus and everything, you know, real estate gurus are notorious for this, right? Making people think that they can get rich overnight with real estate. Well, you can get very wealthy with real estate, but you got to have money to invest in real estate. So I say the first step is figuring out where to generate more income. Side hustles, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And these days it's so easy to do that kind of thing, right? I mean, they didn't have this stuff even back in the, you know, the early 2000s when I was, you know, when I was a surgical resident and I was working all these hours. But shoot, if I had, you know, if I could have drove for Uber, I would have, because I was so, like, I was making no money, right? I was making like 50 grand in San Francisco as a surgical resident in 2006, 2007. And it was like, you know, way below the poverty line in the city of San Francisco. I would have driven for Uber. We didn't have Uber though.
Yeah, right.
All of a sudden there's all these different things that you can do. You could have an Amazon store, you could have Uber, you could, you know, any number of things to do a side hustle. That's where I would start. So.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that very much. It is impossible to do financial planning if there is no money, and it's impossible to be a successful investor for the most part unless you have money. So that is kind of the starting point. I appreciate that. I love asking successful people, I love asking advisors about what habits they see in their most successful clients. And because you are a surgeon and you were around a lot of successful people in medicine, I'm curious if you see habits that translate between being a successful investor and a successful surgeon or a successful doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me give you an example. I think, it's funny. One of my major partners that I work with on the real estate side, that group and the CEO of there, she's actually a computer scientist by training. And I was talking to her about the model that we use and then to generate all this, you know, significant, returns we're getting for ourselves and for investors. And really the funny thing about it was that she's a computer scientist, right? So what we're really looking at when we're breaking down buildings and adding value to buildings, et cetera, is very scientific. And once you get sort of the formula, again, simplification, if once you do that and you do it over and over again and you do it really well, that's what you really need to focus on. So, and I say that because I remember, again, being as a surgeon, there was some procedures where I started doing them. And it, at first they seemed like, wow, this is, I know, this is a big different, you know, a lot of different steps here and it's so complex, et cetera. And people were teaching me that made it seem that way too. But I could usually say I could do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and I'm done. And if I do that quickly and accurately in the exact same way every single time, I will be successful. So once you find a formula that works, you stick with it. You stick with it and you keep doing it over and over again and you scale it. And that is something that I see, you know, with the most successful people I know.
Yeah, I think that that makes all the sense in the world. It's just, you know, a matter of figuring that out. So, and for you, that was just being able to learn from top advisors, like I think you mentioned Robert Kiyosaki. And now you talked about teaching people this formula that's helped you to be successful. So if you would, let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, you mean like the actual mathematical part of it or?
Whichever you think is most interesting.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess, listen, here's what I would say is that now, say now you've got money, right? And we talked about, we've got this math equation, we have mass, and we figured out how we're going to make some extra money to invest. And now you've got, you know, now you're going to look for things that have higher yield, and then you're going to figure out how to leverage them. I would just say a few things about this is that, you know, one of the things that I think keeps people from really making much money is a fear of leverage, fear of debt. You know, as Robert says, you know, there's good debt and there's bad debt, right? You know, if you use debt to buy a TV or a car, it's bad debt. You're going to pay it back. It's never going to pay you anything. But you can use debt for good purposes too. And that's, you know, every major business in the world uses debt to create additional income, right? So I will go as far as to say that, in my opinion, that without debt, it is virtually impossible to become wealthy because it requires that kind of additional other people's money to get to the next level. So for me, my own philosophy on investing is, you know, I focus for this reason primarily in the real estate space. I'm not talking about flipping homes. I'm talking about, you know, buying things, improving them, holding them, that kind of thing. It creates tremendous wealth over time. And the other thing, so for me, that makes up the majority of what I do. Now, if you're, where does the other stuff fit in, right? So where does, say, you know, you mentioned cryptocurrency. Well, I do have this, so I have two podcasts, right? I have Wealth Formula Podcast, which is really for, you know, your typical high paid professional who's trying to figure out what to do outside of Wall Street because they don't want to just go through 2008 all over again and not know what hit them.
Right.
And then there's a cryptocurrency podcast I do, which is called Consensus Network. Now, what the heck would, where does cryptocurrency come into this? Well, cryptocurrency comes into this because, for me, a big impetus for my interest in this is the fact that I was in college, during the internet. In fact, my wife was at Stanford, you know, when, you know, like Sergey and those guys were doing their master's degree at Stanford. She was an undergrad there. I mean, they were like, you know, they're going to San Francisco and going to .com millionaire parties with, like, you know, there was people on her floor that were literally creating multi-million.
So funny.
.com companies. Of course, she didn't end up doing that kind of stuff. Unfortunately for me, what happened out of that is, and people look back and say, "Ah, oh, it's a dot-com bubble, and it blew up, and it was a terrible thing." But yeah, that's true. But guess what? Out of that company came three of the first $1 trillion market cap companies, namely Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft, right? So I think that if you look at the blockchain technology, blockchain and distributed ledger technology in general, I think we have a similar phenomena coming up. And it's sort of I missed it the first time. I think this one's just as big. I really do. I know it's wildly fluctuating, and I know we're in a massive bear market. But I think right. If you look at the technology there, it is compelling. It is extremely compelling. And it's hard for me to imagine that it's not going to become part of our everyday life over a course of time. So when you have that kind of idea and you have the feeling that I wish I had an exposure to that last time, it makes you think, well, okay, so maybe I don't put, all my money into it, but maybe I should have some exposure to it, right? I mean, you're literally seeing like Yale University's endowment. So Yale's, their endowment is, the guy who manages their endowment is like a, legend, and he is, he's done an incredible job. And they actually went and started investing in blockchain. And of course, they're not dumping 20% of a portfolio in there. They're getting small amounts of exposure, 1, 2, 3%. Why is that? Well, because if this is as big as a lot of us think, that 2, 3% in a portfolio can have a tremendous overall impact on a given portfolio. While at the same time, if for some reason things don't go the way that you think they're going to go, it won't have a huge downside, right? So it's a real binary type investment. I think it's what I would call an asymmetric bet, where the return profile is so high that if you put some money into it, that if you lost it, it wouldn't kill you. We call it on my wealth formula show. Of course, I'm talking to a lot of doctors and stuff. We call it sort of your BMW money. Right. Okay. Don't buy your BMW this year. Buy some cryptocurrency, because either way, you're throwing your money away. Right. So, you could look at that in different ways, too. You say, OK, well, maybe I'm not going to, get that surfboard this year or whatever. And, instead, I'm going to bet on myself and buy something that could be life changing in terms of overall impact in my portfolio. That's where I see that. Right. That's where I see crypto. And I'm just excited about the space. For me, I do, despite all of my, my book is all about how to build wealth the way it's been built, for centuries. And it has nothing to do with this kind of speculation. But once you get to a point where, you're not worried about paying the bills and you're not worried about being able to, put food on the table, it's nice to have some exposure to something that could change your life.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that your approach and the percentages that you mentioned definitely makes sense. And I can't imagine a world 5 years from now that this technology won't play a huge part in. So, well, Buck, Savage Nation is ready for your difference making tip. What do you have for them?
Yeah, difference making tip, huh? Yeah, I was trying to think about this when you mentioned that. I would just say that remember that there's a quote that I like, which is, well, I don't know if it's I think I made this one up.
It's an original.
But yeah, it's an original. But this one is okay. So you learn from your mistakes, right? I mean, everybody talks about learning from your mistakes, especially right. For your entrepreneurs out there, and for your budding investors, et cetera. And this is true. No one can really learn anything unless you encounter a number of mistakes. And they can be costly. But the one thing I've learned over time is that they don't have to be your mistakes. So to the extent that you can potentially, learn from mentors, learn from masterminds, learn from other people, you should do it. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to go into the dark cave, it's always better to go in there with somebody who's been there before.
I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on.
Come on.
So, okay. Buck, thanks so much for coming on the show. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you?
Yeah. So we got, I got the two podcasts, the more, I want to, in real estate, hardcore sort of, investor, if you've got some money, you want to learn how to invest it. Show is Wealth Formula Podcast. You can find it all over the place, YouTube or Stitcher, iTunes, etc. Same thing goes for the podcast on cryptocurrency, and that one is called Consensus Network. And if you want a copy of an e-copy of that book, Seven Secrets of Eternal Wealth, you can also you can just text 44222 and put in Wealth Formula, one word, and you can get a copy of that PDF too.
Excellent. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Buck your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Check out the Wealth Formula podcast as well as the Consensus Network podcast and text 44222. Is that what it was?
Yep.
And put in Wealth Formula and you'll get a copy of his book. That's awesome. Thank you again, Buck.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight because we are all in this together.
What's up, Savage Nation? Please support the show by subscribing, leave us a review, and definitely feel free to share us with somebody you think would like it.
Come on.